Good evening, everyone, and welcome to the second installment in our exploration of the major ideas surrounding the halachot of Shabbat and how they contribute to its meaning. As I think I mentioned last time, often when it comes to trying to seek meaning in our religious lives as a whole, but definitely when it comes to Shabbat, we often look for external sources of meaning. We come up with nice ideas and we apply them to Shabbat. And while that is definitely something we do in it, and it has, you know, some advantages, it's also important for us to look and analyze the very core halachic concepts at the foundation of Shabbat. And when we analyze and understand them a little bit better, we actually start to see some of Shabbat's true power emerge. And so in the previous installment, in the first part of this series, we looked at why we refrain from the 39 malachot, a specific set of 39 prohibited activities. And as we saw that these 39 activities are linked to something we are going to start reading about in this coming week's parasha, they are linked to the construction of the Mishkan. What on earth do the 39 malachot have to do with the construction of the Mishkan? Or what on earth does our refraining from doing the same activities that they did in the construction of the Mishkan, why do we do that on Shabbat? So as we saw and we explored at some length, what we saw last time was that in a very real sense, the construction of the Mishkan was the human equivalent of the way in which God created the world. The Torah goes to great lengths when it comes to its word choice, when it comes to the way it frames the construction of the Mishkan to parallel the way the world is described as coming into being in the Torah. And so there is very much a sense by which just as God created the world in 6 days, so too did the Jewish people build the Mishkan. And therefore, their refraining from building the Mishkan on Shabbat only highlighted even more the divine purpose of their mission. And so when we rest on Shabbat, that really highlights two incredibly powerful ideas. The first is the purposefulness of our weekday activities, that they become our acts of our equivalent of building the Mishkan. They become our equivalent of what God did during those 6 days of the week. But also, even more significantly, we rest on Shabbat in order to once again acknowledge our striving to be like God. What makes it so important that we don't turn the hot water faucet on Shabbat is because in a very real sense, by avoiding that, by instantly starting to think in terms of refraining from violating the malachot, it once again conjures the idea of the construction of the Mishkan, the purpose behind that, and thus the purpose behind our weekday activities and our rest. And so the whole notion of avoiding the 39 malachot, without getting into the details of what all of those look like practically, but they really conjure this idea of ourselves trying to imitate God, trying to follow in his ways. And that's the power that comes from our avoidance of the 39 malachot. If I start sharing the source sheet, though, everything that we spoke about last time, our refraining from the malachot, can all be folded into one overarching term. And it's the term Shmirat Shabbat, which literally means, you know, to protect, to guard. We translate it as observing Shabbat. And it is a word that comes from the command of Shabbat in the Ten Commandments found in Parashat Va'etchanan. So not the ones we read a couple of weeks ago, but rather in Parashat Va'etchanan, where we have the Ten Commandments repeated. The Torah says, Shamor, in source number one, Shamor et Yom HaShabbat L'Kadshah, observe the Shabbat day and keep it holy. And essentially what that means is don't violate the 39 Malachot. In a nutshell, that is this notion of Shmirah. But as we saw 2 weeks ago during Parashat Yitro, and if we look at source number two, the, for want of a better expression, the original Ten Commandments begin with a different word, Zachor. Zachor et Yom HaShabbat L'Kadsho. Remember, we'll translate it as remember. Remember the Shabbat day to keep it holy. So one verse says Shamor et Yom HaShabbat L'Kadsho. The other one says Zachor et Yom HaShabbat L'Kadsho. It should be noted, though, I don't want to get into the details of this, though it's a fascinating discussion for another time. It's not simply these two words that are different. If you actually just kind of glance and scan the entire content of these two framings are actually different. One speaks more about creation, one speaks more about Yitziat Mitzrayim, the Exodus. But most significantly for us, we have this different commandment, because that, I think, is an important premise. We never assume Shamor and Zachor are synonyms. We assume that there is something else that we have to do in addition to the Shmira, in addition to avoiding all of the prohibitions of Shabbat. There is an additional command we have to do that is Zachor. And so the first question we're going to answer tonight is what does that mean? Practically speaking, what does this commandment mean? And it's interesting for a couple of reasons, but as we're going to see, we can actually, for want of a better expression, see from first principles how we derive what this command actually means. I could just tell you what it means straight away, but I kind of want us to go through just a few of the sources to better understand how we come to know what this command of Zachor, what this obligation of Zechirat Shabbat, remembering Shabbat, is. So first, if we look through the, you know, statements of Chazal, there are a few important concepts we can already learn about Zachor vis-a-vis Shamor. The first of which is the Gemara in Rosh Hashanah, source number 3, that says the following, V'hatanya, Zachor v'shamor b'dibor echad ne'emru. That Zachor and Shamor were said in the same utterance by God. It's a miraculous occurrence. So for a couple of points on this. The first is that, and again, it's a familiar idea, but as I scroll up once again, if we think for a second, there is a huge theological challenge that sources 1 and 2 present. Because source 2, let's start with source 2, Parashat Yitro, is a record of what God said in the Ten Commandments. Source 1 is Moshe repeating what God said in the Ten Commandments, and yet it's different stuff. So this raises and opens a Pandora's box, which will be a whole conversation for another time. But the simple, elegant answer provided by Chazal is that what Moshe did, what the Torah does, is it records 2 different phrases, not to show a difference between the two, but to capture the fact that 2 different ideas were expressed as 1. And God, because he's God, can utter 2 things simultaneously. Human beings cannot, God can. And thus, Zachor v'shamor b'dibor echad, ne'emru. And what this means, and we're going to see this a little bit in a second, more forcefully expressed, that as carefully as we treat Shamor, as strictly as we treat Shamor, as important as Shmirat Shabbat is to us, so is Zechirat Shabbat. They are equal. They are on an equal plane. As important as it is, as much as our Shabbos is defined by not lighting fires and all the rest, it is equally defined by Zechirat Shabbat. Something else, it's an aside, but it's a, I would say, fun fact. You can decide how fun it is, but it's definitely a fact. Obviously, the phrase Zachor v'shamor b'dibor echad ne'emru is popularized in Lecha Dodi. Though there we know it as Shamor v'Zachor, Lecha Dodi reverses the 2 words, whereas here in the Gemara, it presents it as Zachor v'Shamor, and it makes sense because Zachor comes before. Zachor is found in Parashat Yitro, Shamor is found in Parashat Ve'etchanan. It should be Zachor v'Shamor. Why does Lecha Dodi say Shamor v'Zachor? So this is the potentially fun fact, but definitely the fact. Because if you've never noticed before, it could be, I think, art school make this more explicit even. Lecha Dodi, the author of Lecha Dodi, Shlomo Alkabetz, preserved his name by taking 1 letter in each and every stanza. The very first letter of each and every stanza spells out his name. It's a very common feature of a lot of piyutim, of a lot of poems, Jewish poems. And so his name began with a shin. And so he needed to begin the first stanza with a shin. Zachor v'shamor does not give him his shin, but if he starts with Shamor v'Zachor instead, he gets his shin, and then he can spell out his name. Shlomo Halevi is what it spells out in Lachadori. It's a, again, fun. Hopefully you can delight people with this kind of fun fact over Shabbos. Just, you know, if there's a lull in conversation at any point, just be sure to point out this fact, and it will be a hit. Trust me. But going back to the actual topic that we're discussing, we see that as serious as Shmirat Shabbat is, as important as it is, as much as our Shabbat is defined by those things we don't do, it is equally important that we do Zechira too. And the Gemara in source number 4 in Masechet Brachot states this explicitly to a very fascinating and significant halachic conclusion. Source number 4, Ela Amar Rava, Amar Kra, Zachor v'Shamor, the verses speak of both Zachor and Shamor, to teach us that Kol sheyeshno bishmira, yeshno bizchira, anyone obligated in the shmira is equally obligated in the zechira. So again, that just underscores the point I kind of already made. Your obligation to not light a flame on Shabbat is no more powerful, or is as equally powerful as your obligation of zechira. And this leads to a fascinating conclusion. Vahane nishe ho'il v'itanhu bishmira. Since women are obligated in shmira, itanhu bizechira, they are also obligated in zechira. We are about to see very soon what zechira actually translates into as a practical obligation. You might think that because zechira is going to be a time-bound obligation, and the general principle is, barring some exceptional circumstances, women are exempt from time-bound commandments. Nonetheless, they are obligated in the time-bound commandment of zechira, because zachor v'shamor b'dibor echad. Because just as women are equally prohibited from lighting flames on Shabbat, they are equally obligated in zechira. What is zechira? What does it mean? When the Torah tells us zachor et yom ha-shabbat l'kadsho, what is it saying? And this is actually a question worth considering, because again, very often we just take for granted, we look it up, we know what it means, we get told what it means, and we accept. And that's a good thing. I should just point out, it's a good thing that we accept this is what it is, and we roll with it. But we should always seek to understand, if possible, why things are the way they are. As I've mentioned in other contexts, in Judaism, we do want to see how the sausage is made. We do want to see why things are the way they are. So when the Torah commands us, it gives us this command of zachor, what does it mean? So one way to try and understand what it would mean would be to try and find another commandment in the Torah that is also a zachor commandment. And if that zachor commandment is slightly more obvious over what it is expecting us to do, that will help us understand what the zachor is of Shabbat. Is there such a commandment in the Torah? Well, yes. It's not going to be for over another month, because it is Rosh Chodesh Adar Rishon, but we will have Parashat Zachor, and we will read the following in source number 5. Zachor, et asher asalacha amalek baderech betzeitchem mimitzrayim. Remember, Zachor. It's another Zachor commandment. Remember what Amalek did on your journey as you left Egypt. And then if we skip the rest of the verses until the final line, timche et zecher Amalek, wipe out the memory of Amalek, mitachat hashemayim, from under the heaven, lo tishkach, do not forget. So we see that we have a different Zachor commandment in the Torah. And this Zachor commandment, and I don't want to get into all of the details as to how exactly it's derived, but this Zachor commandment requires an act of declaration. If we take a look at source number 6, the Gemara in Megillah explains and derives exactly what Zechirat Amalek remembering Amalek means. The Gemara asks, Umimai dahai zechira kariyah. How do we know that this term zachor, that the obligation of zechira, requires reading aloud? Dilma, Ion ba'alma, perhaps you only need to look at it. If you think about it, zechira, what does zechira mean? Remember something. It's a very vague term. If we are told to remember something, or it could literally mean, nowadays, if we translate this kind of in the 21st century, we could set a, you know, and just kind of important background, the obligation of zachor when it comes to Amalek is a once yearly obligation. We could set a reminder on our phones once a year. We get a reminder at 9 p.m. at night. Remember what Amalek did. One night, randomly, you hear your phone buzz. You check your phone. It tells you, you know, Amalek once tried to kill you when you left Egypt. You would remember it. Now, that constitutes remembering. It's a very strange command. What does it mean we have to remember something? Putting aside the frequency of the memory, of the remembering, what does it mean that we have to remember something? So Chazal essentially asked this question. Maybe we just need to some frequency, just read something, glance at it, internalize the history. So the Gemara says, no. Lo salka da'atach, you should not think this way. Dichtiv, as the verse says, zachor. And then it goes on to kind of give the explanation. Zachor yachol balev. You might think that zachor, remember, means remember in your heart, remember in your mind. Keshahu omer lo tishkach. But remember, the Torah also said, don't forget. Hare shichchat halev amor. This verse, lo tishkach, is speaking about forgetting within your own mind. Hama'ani mekayim zachor. So why do I also need to be told zachor? Bepeh, because you need to declare it out loud. In order to explain what the Gemara is arguing here, the command of zachor when it comes to Amalek is actually a dual command. We're told at the beginning of the verse, zachor, remember. And we're taught at the end, lo tishkach, don't forget. And what the Gemara senses is that these two words, these two phrases, are capturing different obligations. Lo tishkach means don't forget. Simply that. Just make sure you don't always completely eradicate from your mind the memory of what happened. And therefore, why do I need the Torah to tell me zachor? Zachor must be teaching me something different. And it must be a declaration. There must be some formal mentioning of what Amalek did that is being commanded in the zachor command of Parashat Ki Tetzeh. Zachor in the Torah here does not mean remember in the sense of remember the milk. It does not mean remember, even in the context of Yahrzeits, where we set aside a specific, you know, moment of the calendar, a time in the calendar to devote to, you know, articulating our memories more than we might otherwise. Zachor here means a more explicit demand to make a formal declaration, to make a statement. And thus, when the Torah tells us in source number 2, Zachor et Yom HaShabbat Likadsho, what does that mean? It means make a formal declaration regarding Shabbat, Likadsho, to sanctify it. What is that formal declaration? As we take a look at source number 7, Hachi Ka'amar, the Gemara in Pesachim has a longer extended discussion, and this kind of comes to the end. Zachor et Yom HaShabbat Likadsho, what does that mean? Zochrehu al hayayin bichnisato. Declare Shabbat over wine as it enters. Ainli ela balaila. Okay, so now you've told me I need to do it at nighttime. Bayom minayan. How do I also know that I need to do it during the day? Talmud loma zachor et yom hashabbat. Because the verse specifically references also the day, we have a second obligation to declare Shabbat during the day. Zechirat Shabbat is Kiddush. I will just point out, if, you know, what I said from sources 5, 6, and 5 and 6 was a little bit like, that sounded a bit convoluted. It doesn't, I was wanting to kind of, I could have just skipped sources 5 and 6 and basically gone straight to source 7, but I did want to try and illustrate to the best of my abilities the first principles. At one point, I was a mathematically inclined person. I was actually studying mathematics in university in England. And so deriving things from first principles is an important idea in mathematics. And sometimes I like to think we can do it in other areas too. I was wanting to essentially show and illustrate how Zachor et Yom HaShabbat L'Kadshah translates to Kiddush. It's not just some random idea, make Kiddush, but regardless, what is our biblical obligation of Zachor et Yom HaShabbat L'Kadshah? It's to make Kiddush on Friday night and Shabbat day. It's a positive biblical command and a fascinating point to once again underscore, because we already saw this in source number 4, women can make Kiddush with the exact same legitimacy and validity as men. So at a Friday night meal or a Shabbat meal, if a woman wishes to make Kiddush instead of a man, absolutely fine, because the two, just as she is equally obligated in not setting things on fire on Shabbos, so too, it's an equal obligation for Kiddush, but fine. So now that we understand that there is a positive obligation of Kiddush, and I should just add that there is a little bit of a complicated debate over whether we also include Havdalah in the obligation of Zachor. We're going to kind of put that to the side and ignore it, but I did want to make mention of that. We see that there is an entire new set of our understanding of Shabbat. Shmirat Shabbat is all about the things we don't do. Zechirat Shabbat is about doing one specific act, and it is Kiddush. Now, it's worth asking. So what is the nature of Kiddush? And why is it a special act? Why is it a significant act for us to perform on Shabbat? What does it do? Wherein lies its magic and its majesty? So I want to begin with kind of it's a dumb question. And it's a dumb question because the very fact that I'm asking the question is kind of giving away the fact that the answer is, it's a blatantly trick question. But how many times on Shabbat do we say Kiddush? Now, it's a dumb question because we just saw we make it twice. We know we make it twice. And it's a dumb question because instantly now you are all thinking the very fact that he asked that means the answer must secretly either be 1 or 3. Because we know it's 2, but now he's asking us, how many times do we make Kiddush? So now all of a sudden the answer is not 2. So the answer is still kind of 2. But we do need to take these 2 other possible answers and roll with the thought experiment for a second in order to consider whether we actually make 2 Kiddushes. Why might we make 1 Kiddush? Why might I think, and I'll just add, by thinking about whether we make 1 Kiddush or 3 Kiddushes versus the 2 is going to be the key to unlocking everything about Kiddush. Why might I think we only make 1 Kiddush? And it's because, contrast Friday night Kiddush to Shabbat day Kiddush. So Friday night Kiddush is this whole, it's grand, it's glorious. We read a whole paragraph about God creating the world. We make 2 brachot. It's a ceremony. It is a big deal. It is a significant act, Friday night Kiddush. It is clearly and obviously a unique and specific religious act. What about Shabbat day? So many of you have noticed, to, I would say, varying levels of approval and disapproval, that when I make Kiddush on Shabbat day, I say one thing and one thing only. The bracha of Borei Pri HaGefen, and nothing else. And it's important to recognize that is all that we are demanded to say on Kiddush on Shabbat day. The Gemara, I made this a separate source. The truth is, it's literally the very next line after source 7 in the actual Gemara. But the Gemara asks, Biyom, After it says in Source 7, you also have to make Kiddush on Shabbat day, the Gemara asks, B'yom Mayim Avarich. So what is Kiddush on Shabbat day? Amar Rav Yehuda. Rav Yehuda answers, Borei Pri HaGefen. That's it. It's just the bracha. So there's this, you know, we have this idea of Kiddush Rabbah, that we call it the Great Kiddush, and we have all of these various verses and passages that some people like to say before Kiddush on Shabbat day. And if you are one of those people, more power to you. But it's important to recognize, if on Friday night, if you skipped all the paragraphs, you failed. You did not make Kiddush. Friday night Kiddush consists of, you know, Vayechulu, Borei Pri HaGefen, and the long passage bracha of Mekadesh HaShabbat. Shabbat day, all you need to say is Borei Pri HaGefen. You want to say the entire Sefer Tehillim beforehand, knock yourself out. But if you didn't one day, you'd be fine. All Shabbat day is, technically speaking, is the bracha of Borei Pri HaGefen. And now let's think about this for a second. Because let's say tonight after this year, you want to pour yourself a glass of wine, sit down, relax. You're going to make a bracha beforehand. You're going to make a bracha of Borei Pri HaGefen. So what on earth is the difference between Tuesday night wine at 9? I just thought of that. I'm very proud of myself because I just thought of that rhyme. I know it's like probably a thing. But anyway, Tuesday night wine at 9. What's the difference between that and Shabbat day Kiddush? On the surface, absolutely nothing. There is no difference. If you have a glass of wine any day of the week, you make a bracha of Borei Pri HaGefen. And on Shabbat day 2, you make a bracha of Borei Pri HaGefen. It doesn't seem like Shabbat day Kiddush is all that special at all. So it's not correct, but you could think it's not a real Kiddush. Real Kiddush is Friday night. And Shabbat day is just, you have a glass of wine and that's it. And that's an important idea to consider. It's an important notion to at least hold in the back of our minds, because it's going to be part of the key to understanding the true power of Kiddush. What about more than two Kiddushes? Can we argue that we actually say Kiddush more than two occasions on Shabbat? And the answer is definitively, unambiguously, yes. If we take a look at source number 9 and the Gemara in Masechet Brachot. So the Gemara in Masechet Brachot is trying to answer the following question. It takes a long, long time to ask, you know, and discover this question. So on Motzei Shabbat, at the end of Shabbat, and we say the passage of Atachonantanu, and we insert it into the bracha of Atachonain, and technically speaking, that counts as Havdalah. So the Gemara is asking, so on Motzei Shabbat, on Saturday night, you daven Maariv, do you then go ahead and make an additional Havdalah? Because you already did Havdalah in Maariv. You did Havdalah in your Maariv Amida. So as it's trying to explore this question, we get an answer in source number 9. Amale Ravina la Rava. Ravina said to Rava, Hilchatamai. What is the halacha here? What do we do with this Havdalah question? Amar Lehi responded, Ki Kiddush. We do the exact same thing we do with Kiddush on Friday nights. Ma Kiddush. Af al gav dimikadesh bitzlota. Even though you already made Kiddush in your Amidah on Friday night, Mekadesh akasa. You also make Kiddush on a cup of wine. Af Havdalah Nami, and so too with Havdalah. Af al gav de mavdel bitzlota. Even though you made Havdalah in your Amidah at Achonantanu, mavdel akasa, you're also going to make it on a cup of wine. In other words, we have an additional Kiddush we make every Friday night. The bracha of Mekadesh HaShabbat in our Amidah, those passages that speak to the uniqueness of Shabbat day, says the Gemara in source number 9, that's Kiddush. So actually, you can argue that there are three different Kiddushes that exist during Shabbat, but each of which has a very different form and a very different character. The first Kiddush we make is in our Amida. It's just in davening. That's Kiddush number one. Kiddush number two, Friday night Kiddush. Pretty standard, we get that one. And Kiddush number three is this very strange, not quite Kiddush Kiddush, which is really just a Borei Pri HaGefen, like run of the mill, like we would make any other day of the week, on a glass of wine. But when we actually take a step back and we consider what each of these three Kiddushes contribute to our Shabbat, we actually see that they escalate in terms of their significance, and they set the tone and they dictate the significance of what we experience on Shabbat and the entire purpose to our observance of Shabbat, particularly in the realm of the positive Shabbat commandments. And all of this comes from what I'm about to say, comes from ideas expressed by Rav Soloveitchik, who, as with so many things, you know, captured and understood and articulated ideas better than most people have ever been able to do. And so very much what I'm, and we're going to be reading a quote of his very soon, but we're going to see a really fascinating idea explained by Rav Soloveitchik. Let's take a look at the quote-unquote first Kaddish in the Amidah of Ma'ariv. What do we say? Ata kidashta et yom hashvi'i shmecha. You sanctified the seventh day for your name's sake. Tachlit ma'aseh shamayim va'aretz, the culmination of your creation of heaven and earth. Uveirachto mikol hayamim, you blessed it, you know, of all the days. V'kidashto mikol hazmanim, among all the seasons, you sanctified it. I put ellipses, alokeinu v'lokeivoteinu, ritzevim nuchatenu, God, be pleased with our rest. Kadashtenu b'mitzvotecha, sanctify us with your commandments. V'tein chalkenu b'toratecha, give us a share of your Torah. So that Israel, who invoke your name, who sanctify your name, shall find rest on it. Baruch ata Hashem, mekadesh haShabbat, blessed are you, God, who sanctifies Shabbat. This form of Shabbat, this declaration of Kiddush, is entirely passive. The language is all about what God does. And when you think about the form in which it occurs, it just occurs in the middle of our Amida. It is an entirely passive act of Kiddush. We aren't really doing anything. We aren't acting per se ourselves. We are merely making reference to the fact that it is Shabbat. And said Rav Soloveitchik, this first act of Kiddush essentially recognizes that it is now Shabbat and really fulfills the function of acknowledging that we are bound by the obligation of Shamor. That Shmirat Shabbat is something we are now doing. This is not a fulfillment of Zachor. This is simply an acknowledgement that it's Shabbat. No matter what time Shabbat begins, and no matter how late we leave it to make Kiddush on Friday night, we're still bound by all of the various prohibitions of Shabbat, and our Amidah in Ma'ariv, or our Kiddush in Ma'ariv, simply acknowledges this fact. It is now Shabbat. God made it Shabbat. That's all. However, And I should just add, we would think that that is all we need to do for Shabbat. Because in contrast to the Chagim, which it is upon us to declare when they are happening, Shabbat takes care of itself. We might think that Shabbat is simply a day where our own involvement is basically zero. Shabbat happens because it happens, whether we like it or not, whether we accept it upon ourselves or not. It simply just is. And if that were solely the case, we would never make another Kiddush other than our Kiddush of Ma'ariv. Because that's it. We've accepted Shabbat upon ourselves. In the middle of our Ma'ariv, we have acknowledged we are bound by all of the prohibitions. So what's the additional dimension? So says Rav Soloveitchik the following in source number 11. And by the way, this comes from the Koren produced now a few years ago, a bencher with the commentary of Rav Soloveitchik. And in the back, it has essays. Wonderful, wonderful, you know, safer to get hold of. And Rav Soloveitchik says the following. In other words, if man does not actively sanctify the day, if his Shabbat observance is only passive, he cannot observe the totality of its holiness. While the basic level of Kedushat Shabbat commences on its own with the sun's descent on Shabbat Eve, only man's declaration of Kiddush can create the additional element of holiness. This is an astounding idea when we unpack it. And I think there are potentially two different ways to parse it. Shabbat may happen no matter what we do. No matter what, whatever time Shabbat is going to be this week, let's just say it's going to come in at sunset today was at 5:40. So let's say sunset is going to be at 5:40 something. You know, we'll light candles 18 minutes earlier, but let's just say sunset this coming Shabbos is going to be 5:45. So no matter what we do at 5:45 at night, we already can't start lighting fires. We can't start doing X, Y, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. But that, and the day is automatically holy. But says Rav Soloveitchik, our declaration of Kiddush gives an additional level of holiness to the day. It is actually within our power to increase the holiness of Shabbat through our declaration of Kiddush. Now, Rav Soloveitchik doesn't really describe much more than recognizing this simple but powerful idea that our declaration of Kiddush brings an additional element of holiness to the day. But I would suggest that I think part of the power of Kiddush lies in us recognizing the power of the day. Because again, at 5:45 this coming Shabbat, whether or not we are, you know, consciously aware of the fact that it's Shabbat. What's the act of Kiddush? It's our own declaration. It's our own acknowledgement of the power of the day. In a sense, what Kiddush does is it imbues meaning to all the other things we do on Shabbat. If we didn't make Kiddush, or if we don't think about the Kiddush we make, then our inability to turn on a hot water faucet on Shabbat is merely an inconvenience. It's merely annoying. It makes washing one's face in the morning a horrendous experience. But now we've made Kiddush, every single act we do and don't do now has meaning. We are doing things in the service of God. It intrinsically connects our avoidance of the prohibitions of Shabbat to the meaningful, positive aspects of the day. Now, it is the equivalent to it's to go back to the analogy of remembering. It's not the reminder on our phone randomly. It's as though we had a giant klaxon going through our homes the entirety of Shabbat, reminding us it's Shabbat and imbuing the day with meaning. That's what Kiddush does. The holiness exists regardless, but Kiddush allows us to see that holiness and detect that holiness. And that's what the power of Friday night Kiddush is, giving us the ability to recognize the unique power of the day. And giving us the ability to recognize our role in creating that power, that we actually have a job to do. Sure, no matter what, it will be Shabbat, but it is upon us to decide how the day gains meaning. It is upon us to act to ensure that Shabbat is special that Shabbat is unique. It's upon us to make sure we take the time for, you know, spiritual reflection, learning Torah, davening, all of those various other things. It's all on us. And that's what the act of Kiddush sets off. It is on you. It is on human beings to bring Shabbat, elevate it even further. It will happen regardless, but we have the power to take it to another level. And this helps explain and understand why Shabbat Day Kiddush seems at first so bland. It might look like you are simply making a borei pri hagefen upon a glass of wine like you might do tonight. But there's a difference. Because tonight, your glass of wine is simply a Tuesday night glass of wine. But on Shabbat day, if we think about how it's happened, well, we've already made Kiddush on Friday nights. We're already attuned to the holiness of the day. We've already davened and thus become even more further attuned to the significance of Shabbat. And essentially, Kiddush on Shabbat day recognizes the sheer power of the acts we do. Drinking a glass of wine on Tuesday night, nothing special to it. Drinking a glass of wine Shabbat day, spiritual experience. We don't need to recite additional passages before Kiddush. And this is not to tell people who do not to do so, but I would argue that they're almost a crutch. Those passages beforehand are trying to imbue Kiddush with meaning on Shabbat day, because Borei Pri HaGefen doesn't sound like it has much meaning. But I would argue that if we can be attuned to the significance of Shabbat, if we can already recognize the holiness within the day, then a simple Borei Pri HaGefen is sufficient, because we are already so in tune with the spiritual significance of the day that even a simple bracha over wine has tremendous significance. But there's another step further. If we take a look at source number 11, Rashbam is Rashi's grandson, a prominent rabbi in his own right. It's just an interesting fact, but you will see this comes from the Gemara in Pesachim. So Rashi did not essentially complete his commentary to the Gemara in Pesachim, so his grandson completed it for him, essentially. So even though there is Rashi to the 10th parak, the 10th chapter of Gemara Pesachim, Rashbam is the more commentator of choice for Pesachim. Rashbam says the following. So commenting on what was for us source 8, that simply all one needs to make on Shabbat day is the bracha of Borei Pri HaGefen, Rashbam comments the following. Amar Rav Yehuda Borei Pri HaGefen. At I kisa de chamra, you take a cup of wine, ubruchi, you make a bracha, umashti, and you drink, mishum kavod Shabbat, in honor of Shabbat. This is what you are doing Shabbat day Kiddush. You are taking a cup of wine, making a bracha, drinking it, because in honor of Shabbat, l'chalek bein midat Shabbat l'midat chol, in order to distinguish between Shabbat and weekdays. So before we actually go any further, the simple idea there would also be, yes, tonight you might have a glass of wine, but you don't need to. The mere act of drinking a cup of wine on Shabbat, simply because it is Shabbat, in and of itself lends a certain significance to the day. But as Rashbam adds, Shehu inyan shir, she'ein omrim shira ela al hayayin. And really, what this act of drinking a cup of wine isn't really about drinking the cup of wine. It's about shira. It's about singing songs of praise to God. Because we only recite songs of praise apart while holding a cup of wine. It's a concept I don't really want to get into. But it's this idea that one pairs wine, a significant drink, a significant act, with shira, with song, with praise of God. And essentially, our Borei Pri HaGefen and our drinking of Kiddush is effectively a form of shira. It's a form of praise giving to God. And Rashbam adds that this is not actually his idea. It's actually Rav Achai Gaon, who writes it, you know, on his stuff in Parashat Yitro. Our act of Kiddush on Shabbat day is actually the most elevated form of them all. Friday night Amidah is simply the recognition that Shabbat has come upon us. Friday night Kiddush itself allows us to discern and recognize and elevate the holiness of the day. And then on Shabbat day, already halfway through Shabbat, when we've been attuned to this holiness for so many hours, we pick up a cup of wine. We make a borei pri hagefen, but in doing so, we perform an act of shira, an act of praise giving to God. It's the most simple act. And if it were to happen at any other point in the week, it would be hard to argue successfully that drinking borei pri hagefen is an act of shira. Tonight, your glass of wine is not an act of praising God. It's an act of drinking wine. Don't kid yourself that you can now excuse yourself for drinking wine all during the week continually in order to praise God. It doesn't work like that. But the point is, by Shabbat day, we have become so attuned to the unique holiness of the day that even a simple act like drinking a cup of wine becomes an act of shira, an act of praise giving to God. Our conscious choice to pick up this cup of wine, make the borei pri hagefen, and drink it constitutes an act of praise giving towards God. And this is actually the very way Rambam formulates the obligation of Kiddush. Rambam writes the following in source number 12. Mitzvat asei min haTorah. There is a positive biblical obligation. Lekadesh ad yom haShabbat bidvarim. To sanctify Shabbat day with a declaration. Shneemar, as it says in the Torah, Zachor et yom haShabbat lekadesh. Remember the Shabbat day to sanctify it. Kolomar, Zochrehu, Zechirat Shevach v'kiddush. What this Zachor means is declare it with praise and sanctification. Shira, Shevach, praise. This is an intrinsic component of Kiddush. And as he adds, V'tzarich l'zochrehu b'chnisato v'yitziato, you have to mention it both as Shabbat begins and Shabbat ends, b'chnisato b'kiddush hayom v'yitziato b'havdalah, Shabbat, Kiddush, and Havdalah. But the key thing here, Rambam says, is intrinsic in the nature of Kiddush is this component of Shevach, is this component of Shira, is this component of praise giving towards God. And so, as I stop the screen share, because we're done with the source sheet, what we see is that Shabbat is obviously not just defined by the Shmirah. It's not just defined by those things that we don't do on Shabbat. It is also equally defined by the positive obligations of Shabbat, principally among them, our obligation to make Kiddush. And what we actually see is, while there are two occasions we make Kiddush on Shabbat, in some ways, there are actually three. And those three escalate in terms of their significance. And that escalation captures the actual mentality we should have over Shabbat. We begin our Amidah simply by acknowledging it is Shabbat. We are now bound by the obligations of Shabbat. It is passive. There you go. It's an important, necessary step. But what comes next is our own declaration on Friday night that the day has a unique holiness. And that allows us, encourages us, hopefully forces us to recognize the holiness within the day. And in theory, that continues through Friday night, where we eat a meal with purpose, and that purpose being to fulfill a mitzvah of Shabbat. And then we go to sleep, we wake up, we go to shul again, we sense, hopefully, we continue to sense that holiness. And we continue to sense that holiness so much, that unique spirituality of Shabbat day, so much that by the time it comes to daytime Kiddush, our simple act of raising a glass and making borei pri hagefen constitutes a form of shira. constitutes a form of shevach, is an act of praise to God in and of itself in ways we could never otherwise do. And by thinking these things as we make kiddush, we create a very important feedback loop, because these acts help us recognize and continually remember the significance of the day. And hopefully it encourages us to devote, you know, our Shabbat day as much as possible, as well as, you know, we're blessed with family and friends. We spend time with family and friends on Shabbat. And we definitely want to rest and relax on Shabbat, but we also want to devote it to our spiritual pursuits. To think about, you know, all of those areas in our lives where we wish to increase in our spirituality, to devote ourselves to Torah learning. But all of that comes, in a sense, from our declaration of Kiddush. And if we say Kiddush with this consciousness in mind, it can elevate our Shabbat in ways we otherwise cannot do. At this point, if anyone has any questions, comments, queries, or thoughts, feel free to either type them in the chat or alternatively unmute yourself. I forgot to bring a drink down with me, so I cannot now take a long, long sip of a drink while giving people time to type something in the chat. Frank has a question. Yes, Frank.
You know, the kid, I see it as divided into two parts. It's recognition of Torah, which is in some circles, that's why you stand during the first part of the Kiddush, and the second part is rabbinic. But I was listening carefully to what you said about the excitement of being able to bless Hashem in the present tense as part of the Friday night Kiddush. Other than that, say, Borei Pri HaGafen, I mean, can you elaborate more or stretch it out a bit on the sanctification of God as a part of the Kiddush?
As in, how does the actual text of Kiddush itself fit in with the? Oh, that's a good point. That would have been a good thing to put on the actual shir itself. So Friday night Kiddush, we stand for the first, there's a whole, you know, lots of questions about what do we do. I am very particular in what I do. So you stand for the first paragraph, because that is, and someone actually commented, we stand because we are acting as Edim, as witnesses, and witnesses stand when they give testimony, and we are testifying to the fact that God created the world. And then we ideally sit, because of the halachic principle that one says Kiddush B'makom su'uda, in the place that they are eating, and a lot of halachic figures take that very literally to mean literally in the place, in the stance, be sat, because you're going to have this meal sitting. So the first part of Kiddush is about testifying that God created the world. The second is, once again, this declaration that God is what makes Shabbat holy, but it creates this intrinsic relationship between creation and Shabbat. And when we bear in mind, because we begin by saying God created the world and then he rested on Shabbat, and then we start talking about Mekadesh HaShabbat and God sanctified Shabbat. And when we think about what we had talked about last time, that it's the act of creation and the ceasing from creation and our mirroring of that in our lives, that's when you can start to detect the significance of the act of Kiddush. We're essentially connecting the dots. God created, we are now declaring, you know, Shabbat holy. We are referencing the holiness of Shabbat, which is linked to his refraining from creation, mirrored by our refraining from creative acts, Melechet Machshevet, which is a very specifically defined category. And so that's essentially, in a sense, Kiddush is almost a tutorial of how to spot the holiness of the day. That would have been a really nice thing to say on the main part of the shiur. I hate it. This happens, I would say, thank God, rarely. But sometimes I realize that someone asked me a question, I'm like, this is what I should have said in the main body of the shiur. Oh, well. I might actually chop the recording off after this point now so that people can hear this bit. But because I think that's actually an important point to stress, that the whole notion of Kiddush itself is almost sensitizing us to the power of what we are doing and the power of the day. And then on Shabbat day, we don't need to do that again because we did it on Friday night. We know the cup of wine. We know what it means at this point. So we can almost just skip the line and go straight to the holiness of Shabbat just simply with the Bore Priya Geffen. We don't need to go through the entire tutorial again because we've already mastered the idea, hopefully, at that point.